Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. The craft of photography has changed in a big way over the last decade or so. Ever more sophisticated digital cameras make it easier than ever to not just snap good photos, but edit them on the spot, post them online, attach captions to them. The cameras on many cell phones are as good in some ways as standalone digital cameras, and yet we'd all still like to take better pictures. The more serious hobbyists among us are far from satisfied with the automatic settings on most digital cameras, and then there are plenty of us who still like to take photographs with good old-fashioned film. Today on the program, we will discuss the changing technology of picture-taking with Brian Johnson, professor of journalism at the University of Illinois. He drops by from time to time to talk about photography and to field your questions on both equipment and technique. Whether you are a pro or a novice, whether you shoot film or digital photos, whether you know the ins and outs of photography or just want to make sure you snap some decent pics at the next birthday party, your questions are welcome this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on our Facebook page. We're at Will Radio TV Online, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Brian Johnson, welcome back to Focus.
Oh, glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And I guess we should probably start with whatever is the latest gadgetry that we should think about in terms of digital camera shooting and editing.
Sure.
What's changing?
Well, one of the main things that you're seeing, and it's something that we've talked about on the show for quite a while, is all the manufacturers had this race to see who could have the most number of megapixels on the imaging chip. And, you know, we talked about at the time that what they didn't really advertise was how large the sensor was. Well, now you're seeing that they're starting to have a whole range of cameras that have larger sensor sizes because the quality of the image is not just determined by the number of megapixels. It's also determined by the size of the chip, because the larger the chip can be, the greater the dynamic range can be of the image. So you're seeing a whole range of cameras that are coming out that are a little bit modeled after the point and shoot, you know, format. Some of them with interchangeable lenses, some with just built-in lenses, but the imaging sensor itself is getting larger.
All right, so let's first talk about the megapixels part.
Yeah.
So the more megapixels you have, and that I imagine by the term means tiny little pixels, little squares, the higher resolution of your
It is, and you know, the thing to think about in the wow, isn't that amazing end of it, is that a megapixel equals 1 million pixels. So if you have a 16-megapixel camera, you're talking about 16 million pixels.
Little dots of information, visual information.
Right. And the thing to tie in with that is that a lot of these sensors are about the size of your pinky fingernail. So if you can imagine fitting 16 million individual little spots on a chip that's the size of your, you know, pinky fingernail, you know, you get a sense of how incredible it is. Well, when you're trying to cram in all of those pixels there, yeah, it does make your image, it gives there more points that can be sampled to put together for your final image. But if you can make the sensor larger, it lets you do some things as far as, you know, each of the pixels can be more efficient in recording that information, and it can have a greater dynamic range to it. So if you had, let's say, a 12-megapixel chip that was in the smaller size and a 12-megapixel chip that's in one of the larger sizes, the image that was taken with the same exact megapixel density but mm-hmm. with a larger chip, it would be a higher quality image. It would have richer detail and colors, and overall, you know, be sharper.
Are these higher quality images coming out of cell phone cameras at this point?
You know, what's also happened while they've been going to the larger sizes is that because they had gotten so efficient at making smaller chips have high megapixel densities, a lot of the cell phone cameras now might have like an 8-megapixel camera built into it. And a lot of those images are amazingly good. Amazingly good. There's a really important aspect to all of this that's crucial to remember. The best camera is the one you have with you.
That's true.
Because so often people talk about all these great features and it's like, okay, well, do you have your camera with you? Well, no.
Well, and that's why, I mean, so many more people, I think, these days are relying on that cell phone camera as their primary
right.
and maybe sole camera.
Right. And they can, you know, the quality of those cameras is good enough that you can do that for most kind of average picture taking. They don't, for the most part, have any kind of optical zoom built in. But, you know, for most picture taking, whether it's, you know, pictures of people at a party or there's been a huge upsurge in people taking pictures of their food. You know, the wonderful dessert that's been placed in front of them or,
yeah.
you know, here's this, you know, tortilla that I just received, you know, so they have the camera with them.
Are you making fun of all of us in our social media lives?
You know, there's a comedian who has this line says, you know, well, back in the, you know, 70s, we didn't have all these, you know, cameras. It's like, Oh, well, I don't have a camera to take a picture of this dessert. I guess I just better eat it.
But you're right. We are all doing that. And I count myself hanging my head in shame among those who
yeah.
have done that before.
Well, and I think tied in with that, and, you know, I think social media does play a great role in this. But think about pictures that were taken with film and we got pictures from them. Where are those pictures now? Well, they're probably in an envelope. In a drawer somewhere, maybe.
Or in a photo album.
Yeah, if you were, you know, one step more organized or in a photo album. And when was the last time you looked at those images? You know, the thing about putting it on a social media site is that people can see them right away. But then also it's fairly easy if you want to look at them. You can call them up and take a look at
yeah,
them.
Yeah, but you know what? I guess, and maybe this is me, but I have this sense that the photos that I have taken and held onto with film that I have collected from past generations of my family,
right.
they're all very carefully in a photo album, and I look at those very carefully in great detail and care about them, whereas the photos I take with my, you know, the camera on my cell phone that I upload to Facebook, I did it, and then I might one day look at it once again, but
right.
probably not.
Well, and I think there's definitely something to be said there. In one other aspect, that when you're shooting film, there was a base level cost. You had to buy the film. You had to process the film. Most of the time, you'd have prints made. So every time you took pictures, you would have like a 24 exposure roll. So you had
right.
24 pictures to take.
So you had to be really
event.
Judicious about what is it I'm
right.
going to snap. And you had, and you, I mean, I felt like emotionally I cared more about that photo than I do today.
I think in some ways the really neat thing though about being able to take digital images is that you're relieved of the duty of being a bookkeeper at the same time you're being a photographer. So you can take many more pictures and possibly capture a moment that you wouldn't have captured because you're trying to make the best picture you could with the limited resources that you had.
And also, as technology is changing, among the other elements that we need to get into this hour is we see the ability to edit, to refine the photo
exactly.
after it's taken.
Exactly.
And that's different from the past.
You know, yeah. And just really quick on that idea, the digital cameras now produce, on average, such a flawless image in general, you know, all things being equal compared to, let's say, film and the older cameras. The images are so good just right out of the camera that we don't have to do very much editing to them. So what's interesting, if you look at a lot of the applications that are out there for, you know, tablet devices or computers, a lot of them aren't necessarily out there to improve the quality of the image as a straightforward image. They're there to artistically adjust the image so that it will look like a vintage photo or that it will look, you know, like a beautiful black and white image, or it'll look like a, you know, kind of a posterized image. You can do things like where you can soften out the background and keep the person in focus. So So that's been the really interesting thing about the editing side of it.
And I guess that also affects how we capture the photos themselves. That we spend more time these days when we take a picture. It's more about capturing as much visual information as possible and then fixing it later.
Right.
The way you want it versus...
Exactly. No.
You know,
and that's,
doing it all at once.
Right. No. And that's a really important point as well, is that many of the cameras have built-in filters. So they'll have a black and white filter. They'll have a sepia tone picture filter. They'll have like a miniaturization filter. For the most part, I always advise people to take images straight out. Just shoot them as a normal picture, normal color image. And then if they want to do any adjusting to it, they can do that after the fact. If they decide they don't want to do it, they have a picture that's just a normal image that hasn't been... that there hasn't been information thrown away because they've taken it using a filter in the camera.
I want to ask you a question, but I don't want your answer right
sure.
away. I want you to think about this. Is there any reason we should take photographs with film anymore at all?
Okay.
Let's just leave that out there for
we'll
a few
let
minutes.
Let that percolate.
All right. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Brian Johnson, professor of journalism in the College of Media at the University of Illinois and a former newspaper staff photojournalist. He joins us from time to time to discuss the craft of photography and to field your questions on both equipment and technique. Whether you're a pro or a novice, whether you shoot film or digital photos, we welcome your questions at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. And we will begin this morning with Phyllis in Urbana. Good morning, Phyllis.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, I have a Canon Rebel, a digital Canon Rebel,
uh-huh.
and I'd like to get a wide-angle lens. I've heard people say that that's a good way to shoot not only rooms in a house, but also groups of people.
Right.
When I looked online, though, I was scared to death by the price.
Right, right.
And I have no idea how you equate, you know, just a little bit of wide angle. You know, I don't want to shoot pictures in the forest. I
right.
just want a little bit.
Yeah.
Is there any, are they all that expensive?
You know, something that I think it's easy to overlook when, especially when cameras in general can be so inexpensive, is that a lens is basically just like a fine piece of crystal, because the lens has to be optically clear and perfect
mm-hmm.
without any deficiencies in it. So that's part of the reason that lenses are so expensive, is that the lens elements within them have to be made to such a high precision that that adds a lot of expense. I always had a belief that if there was going to be a problem with a picture I'd taken, I wanted that problem to be my fault and not the fault of the equipment I was using.
Good point.
Yeah. And so even though, yeah, you can spend easily, you know, $200 to $2,000 on a lens, I would, you know, probably buy the one that I can most afford, but that will give me the greatest flexibility.
Should I stay within the Canon family?
So I, in general, always like to do that when I was buying lenses.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of manufacturers out there that really produce pretty decent kind of third-party products. So you can, you know, one of the manufacturers that's out there is named Sigma. And, you know, they make some pretty high-quality lenses that, you know, it isn't just a knockoff lens, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you should. I would also pay attention to what people's reviews are. And one other place you can go, there are some websites out there that actually test equipment and give you their review of the product. One of the ones that I like to go to is called DP Review. So it's dpreview.com. And, you know, I just go there, and if I'm interested in something, I look at their test results, and then I say, well, we have this Canon lens and this Sigma lens. You know, the Canon lens is $100 more expensive, you know, and then I look at the different qualifications of it and see if that's enough for me to want to spend the extra money.
Brian, is there any rule of thumb on How wide an angle? Are they actually talking about meters across or?
Yeah, it's what's interesting now is that since cameras have a multitude of different chip sizes, the actual view that you'll get from any lens is partially tied in to the chip size. So with the Rebel, I believe it has what's called a magnification factor of 1.6. So if you bought a lens that was a 10 millimeter lens, which would be a pretty wide angle lens, when you use it on your camera, it would be a 16 millimeter lens because of that magnification factor. So what that means for you and a lot of people that have the digital SLR cameras is that if you're buying a wide-angle lens, it seems like you're buying a tremendously wide-angle lens. But when you put it on your camera, because of that multiplication factor, it's not as wide as you thought it would be.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's an important consideration. So you might buy an 18 millimeter lens, but you know, really that ends up being, you know, more of a modest wide angle.
Okay, I sure appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Next up is David in Urbana. Good morning, David.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering about the advisability of using a UV lens, a UV filter on a digital camera.
Right. Many times I'll use a UV filter as basically a transparent lens cover. So I would always like to have my camera ready to shoot as quickly as possible. So a lot of times, beyond its capability as filtering out some of the UV spectrum of light, I would use it as a way to protect my lens. I think it's a good idea. It can add a little bit of a slightly, I don't know, the slightest bit of a pinkish cast when you're in a situation where there isn't a UV light issue, but usually it's not that big of a problem. For landscape shots and things like that, I think a UV filter is nice because it helps filter out some of that, you know, higher spectrum light that can cause a little bit of haze and maybe off color for images in the distance. So I think it's a good idea, you know, mostly, honestly, because of the lens protection features.
Well, I've been using one. I've been told that there's a filter on the sensor that filters out the UV, but I never.
Right. And you know, most of the sensors do have you know, filters over them. Sometimes just, you know, flat out for the color. But as I say, I usually buy a UV filter really more for the protection value than for the UV filtering mm-hmm. value.
At high altitudes, is there still enough UV getting through that built-in filter that you'd want to use a UV filter anyway?
You know, probably, but the other part of the issue is that, you know, most of the digital cameras, they have automatic white balance set up so that, you know, it usually isn't that much of a concern. That I would say to myself, ooh, I need a UV filter because, you know, I need to worry about the UV light. So I think it's worth, you know, having one. Yes, it's great for those landscape shots when there's some UV or if you're at a higher altitude and you have a tendency to have a little bit more UV light. But, yeah, as I say, mostly for the protection value.
Well, I guess I'll continue using it for the protection.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call, David. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest is Brian Johnson, professor of journalism in the College of Media at the University of Illinois and a former newspaper staff photojournalist. He joins us from time to time to discuss the craft of photography and to field your questions on both equipment and technique. We welcome your questions for Brian Johnson at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. And we will continue our conversation in just a few minutes. But first, a reminder that we are in the midst of a brief year-end fundraising campaign here at WILL in which we're seeking to raise $36,000 in just 36 hours of fundraising. This is your opportunity to support the in-depth news and thoughtful analysis that you hear every day right here on WILL. And we have a different phone number for you to call to do so, 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455. Or if it's easier to remember, just call Big Will. Your contribution will help ensure the future of programs like Focus and all the work we do here at WILL every day to bring you news and information that is factual and offers context and clarity about the issues and ideas affecting us all. To talk some more about the importance of your contribution right now, we are joined by David Teal. Good morning, David.
Good morning, and it's great to be here this morning. It sounds like we're doing great so far. We have well over $7,000 in pledges so far this morning toward that goal of $36,000. We have heard from 37 people.
That's great.
We need to hear from more, though. We need to hear from you right now at 244-9455. And we've got a pool of money here. Basically, we've got a kind of a matching grant going on this morning that if you make whatever pledge you make at any level, we will add $36 to that. And so, you know, your pledge right now of $50 becomes an $86 pledge. You don't have to worry too much about doing the math there. Just know that it's another $36 toward the $36,000 in 36 hours.
I love the numerical symmetry we have going on this morning.
And we want to remind you, too, that we've been giving away some tickets to our upcoming bus tour to Chicago for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. But I'm told they're going fast. So if that's something you heard about earlier this morning, you're interested, definitely call right now, 244-9455.
Let me walk through this. So first of all, it's February 28th.
February
28th. So take a look at your calendar and see if that's a night you can do this. Here's what will happen. You come here to WILL. You park your car in our parking lot. You know, all so far so good. You hop on.
that's easy.
That's the easy part. This is the even easier part. You hop on a bus that we've chartered. We'll have a boxed lunch for you for the drive up there. We will have, we'll drop you off right outside the theater. You'll be part of the group from WILL, so you won't have to stand in line for tickets. You'll go right in. You'll see the show. It'll be, of course, a great show. And then we'll be right outside at the end to take you back. And Bob Colquhoun, our station manager, will host you all the way through this evening. It'll be a lot of fun. And again, that's our way of saying thank you for a contribution of $250 or more at 217-244-9455. But as David just mentioned, we have a limited number of tickets because obviously we have a limited number of seats on the bus.
Yes, we do not have infinite buses here, just the one. And so we need to hear from you right now. They are going fast. 244-9455 is the call.
It just occurred to me, I think that was a Doctor Who episode, wasn't there? Yeah. The infinite buses?
The infinite buses. No, not yet.
Oh, okay. They got to work on that. 244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. Of course, we have lots of ways of saying thank you for that contribution, but the bottom line is that you are ensuring the future of the news and information, the great conversations that you hear on Focus every day. It's all possible because of your financial support. And again, David, as you mentioned, we have this great member match opportunity right now.
That's right. So your $40 pledge right now becomes a $76 pledge. Let's see. Well, your $36 pledge would become a $72 pledge.
Yes, it would.
We can just add 36 to anything.
Your $10,000 gift right now would become $10,000 plus 36.
36, yes. That's right. But no, it's great. We would love to hear from you this morning. Take advantage of that member match and maybe get some tickets to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Excellent. David, I imagine you'll get a chance to catch up on how we're doing, and we'll mm-hmm. check back with you in a little while.
All right. Great.
Thank you
Thanks.
Very much.
Programming on WILL is made possible by McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation at 5th and John Streets in Champaign, a welcoming and inclusive community living out a progressive approach to faith. McKinley Church's schedule of Christmas season services is available online at www.mckinley-church.org.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guest today is Brian Johnson, professor of journalism in the College of Media at the University of Illinois, and a former newspaper staff photojournalist. And he joins us from time to time to discuss the craft of photography and to field your questions on both equipment and technique. Whether you are a pro or a novice, whether you shoot film or digital photos, whatever the case may be, we welcome your questions at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We will go next now to a call from Bloomington, Illinois. Good morning.
Yes, I had a question in regard to pixels. You know, like a lot of the cameras have 8 megapixels or 10 or 12 or more. I was just curious to what the human eye might be equal to in terms of megapixels.
Well, I've seen some articles about that over the years. Some of it depends on how they're looking at what that resolution would be equivalent to. Some of the early studies that I saw said that the human eye would be equivalent to somewhere around 20 megapixels. But it's deceptive in a way because, you know, when we see, we have binocular vision, we're seeing with two eyes that make things look three-dimensional. We also have dynamic exposure adjustment. So when our eye goes into a dark spot, we let in more light through our pupils. So it's a difficult comparison to make. Yeah, and then the other thing is that's tied in with that is that how are you looking at that image? Are you talking about printing the image?
Well, I was just kind of curious. You know, sometimes you go outside and you can just, you know, look at a leaf, you know, from quite a distance, and you can focus in on one leaf on a tree or something.
Right, right.
A fair amount of detail. And I know that the part of the eye is, you know, has a higher resolution than the peripheral vision.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I just wondered, you know, like, we're taking a picture and we want it to capture everything, you know, that our eye might wander to and see in detail, you know, to be able to take a picture with a camera and then have it be about equal, let's say.
Right. You know, and it's also amazing because a lot of the images we look at, we're really going to look on a computer monitor or on a TV screen. You know, what's the overall representation of that image and, you know, trying to, you know, blend it in to what the human eye might see.
Yeah, it was just a curious science type question.
No. Thanks for asking that.
Thanks for the call. It does raise the question, though, as we see increasingly more sophisticated technology coming our way in the form of digital cameras that have ever higher resolution, ever higher quality. Do we reach a threshold where, okay, that's as sharp a picture as we need it to ever get?
Right. No, exactly. And that's why the megapixel race is pretty much over, where the manufacturers have gotten up to, you know, 12 megapixels, 16 megapixels, and there's not that much more to gain by having a higher megapixel density. So, so what they've done is they've added features to the cameras. They're starting to make the imaging sensors larger. Something else that I wanted to bring up, too, is that the ISO of the sensor, it's not exactly the sensitivity, but it's somewhat equivalent to the sensitivity of film. In the film days, if you had a 1600 ISO film, that was a high ISO film. Some of the new cameras now have ISOs that go up to 256,000, you know, for the ISO.
And what does ISO stand for?
So ISO, the letters stand for International Standards Organization,
okay.
but what it stands for essentially for us to think about is the higher the ISO, the easier it is to shoot pictures in lower light level conditions.
Got it.
Or with lenses that don't let as much light through them. So that's been a real advance as well, is that we can shoot pictures in situations with hardly any light.
Let's go next to Jim in Ogden. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question here with regard to, most of the cameras now have that little LED screen in the back.
Right.
Which is really handy. But it's, when you're outside and taking pictures in the sunlight, sometimes it's hard to see that.
Right.
And I was wondering if you could give us some suggestions on the kind and model of a camera that would have a viewfinder as well as that little LED screen. Most of the time, we're taking pictures outside of scenery, maybe a few pictures inside of people, but very seldom would we be taking pictures at sporting events. And I was
right.
wondering if you had some ideas on the best values for that kind of a camera.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Some of the point-and-shoot cameras have what's called a tunnel viewfinder. So it's sort of an optical viewfinder where you can put your eye right up next to the viewfinder, and you're not dependent upon the pixels on the screen to show you what you're going to take a picture of. Something else is that with many of the cameras, you can adjust the brightness of the LCD screen on the back. So if you are in a bright, sunny condition, you can increase the brightness. Something else that's kind of funny in an old school kind of way, there are companies that sell shades for the LCD screen so that you can sort of put the shade around the LCD screen so it puts the screen in shadow so it's easier to see what's on that screen.
Do you have any models or makes in mind that would just have the regular viewfinder as well as that screen? For example, we were out to Grand Canyon, and we happened to see some condors. And we had one of these cameras, didn't have the viewfinder on it. And they're a huge bird. Zero in on it and telephoto and then find it. And then you got to get in the shade where you can see what you're taking a picture of. The bird's gone.
Right, right.
And I was wondering, do you have models of cameras that in mind that would be a good value for that sort of thing?
Sure. One breed of camera that's out there now that is sort of in that middle gap. Sometimes they're called the mega zoom cameras. Sometimes you'll see it listed as an electronic viewfinder. So what they have is they have a little viewfinder that inside it's sort of like what you might see if you're looking through a viewfinder on a video camera. Essentially it's like looking at a little TV screen. So with those cameras, the viewfinder image isn't as sharp as it would be if you were looking through an optical sensor. But what it does do is it lets you put your eye right up to the camera, and it shows you exactly what the sensor is seeing, and it gets around some of that, issue. Most of the manufacturers, Canon, Nikon, even Panasonic and Sony, they have cameras in this kind of super zoom range where they have an electronic viewfinder. A lot of them I've seen for very reasonable prices. I mean, some even as low as, $100, on up to, $500. So for the range of optical zoom that those have, and also for the electronic viewfinder, those are the type of cameras that you're thinking of. That would
okay.
be good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Next up is Wendy in St. Joe. Wendy, good morning.
Yes, I have MS and I have limited mobility with my right hand, and I would like to take pictures, but I haven't found a camera a simple point and shoot that would be for somebody using their left hand.
Right, right, right. Mm. Absolutely. This will maybe sound like an obvious thing, and maybe you've tried it, but you could hold the camera upside down so that the shutter button would be on the left hand side, and you would take the picture with your thumb
right.
instead of with your index finger. One of the downsides of that is that if you want to take any flash pictures, then the flash is kind of underneath the lens rather than on top of it. But it is absolutely an issue. Some of the cell phone cameras, they have the little shutter button built in right on the on the cell phone display. So like in the Apple iPhone, there's a little shutter button that you could hold your camera, hold your phone, either, you know, so the shutter button is on the left side or the right side. So that might be an option as well.
Yeah, it just seems strange.
I know. You know, because even you can buy guitars that are left-handed guitars, and you can buy scissors that are left-handed scissors.
Yes,
so it really is an interesting conundrum, that because most of the cameras still have an actual physical button for taking that picture, that you're limited in that way. But as I say, you know, and there are also some cameras out there that have touch screens for the rear panel, and I don't know, I haven't looked into that at all, but I wonder if some of those might have a feature where you could make the rear LCD screen, if it's a touch screen, if you could, you know,
move
have
it over
that,
somewhere else on
the
screen.
Yeah, so you could have it be a shutter button. So that's something that that would be worth looking into.
Okay, well, I was hoping you'd have a simple yes.
Yeah, I wish I had a better answer than that, but
I think that's
we are.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. All right, somebody out there, make a left-handed camera. Let's go next to Paul in Champaign County. Good morning, Paul.
Hi. I have a sort of a general question and a specific thing on using an iPhone for a camera. And the general thing is the app Camera Plus is what I use, and it allows you to control the exposure a little bit. So I don't know if you're familiar with that. But the other specific thing is in some sort of concert settings where there's bright lights, I've had some trouble even trying to use that.
Right.
And I was thinking what you thought of the idea of slipping a little sheet of polarized film between the case and the lens, and whether you think that might help or whether there's already some polarizing.
Yeah, you know, most of the problem when you're in a concert situation is that the camera, for a lot of the, you know, simpler cameras, is that they're metering the entire scene. And so what the camera sees is, oh, well, I have a little bright spot in the middle, but look at all this dark area all the way around. So it tries to give an exposure to make the dark area show up and, you know, as much as it can have the light area or the spotlight area show up. So the things you can do if you're camera can adjust for that, and I'm not familiar with the software that you mentioned for the camera, but you can either, some cameras will have, so you can set the light metering pattern, so you can set it in a spotlight setting, and what it'll do then is it'll just take the exposure reading just from the very center part of your image, and that way hopefully you can have that center part just on the spotlight part of your picture, and that will help expose for that spotlight. The other thing that you might be able to do if it didn't have a difference in the metering patterns is that a lot of cameras will have an exposure compensation setting. So if you set your exposure compensation to -2, that would probably also do the trick, where it will essentially, in the camera's mind, be underexposing the picture by 2 stops. But really what you're doing is you're making it, you know, do its overall exposure, but then reducing the exposure, and that would help you adequately record that spotlight scene.
But in this case, polarization wouldn't help. It might help in some other circumstances, you think? Is there any? I'm sure I can experiment it with, but I don't know where to find it. There's no camera shop.
Right. You know, I mean, one thing you could do, and I haven't tried this at all, but you could probably buy just a regular camera polarizing filter and, you know, hold that in front of the lens of your camera. You know, it certainly wouldn't be convenient at all, but it would be something you could experiment with. So, yeah, you know, polarizing filters do a really great job, particularly for landscape shots, because you can polarize the light that really makes the sky go a nice, rich, deeper tone of blue, and it really brings out detail in clouds. In some situations, if you have a reflection in glass or in a puddle or in a pond that you want to try to reduce, but it would be, you know, a little bit of a, you know, thrown together thing to try that. But I think it would work fairly easily, and especially if you're talking about an iPhone, where that lens is up by the corner. So it'd be fairly easy, I think, to, you know, hold a filter in your hand and also, you know, still hold on to the iPhone.
Thanks very much for that call. We've had another call come in, somebody who couldn't stay on the line, but had the suggestion for the previous caller who was looking for a sort of limited mobility option. What about a remote shutter switch like pros use, or maybe even a foot switch? So if that's an
Absolutely.
Option even
yeah.
to sort of tap your toe.
That's a fantastic idea. You know, a lot of the cameras, they have, you know, Bluetooth built in, so it could be that there's a feature where you could use the Bluetooth. Something else that you could probably do in that case, too, is that if you had your camera set up in a self-timer mode.
Just think of that.
Yeah.
If it's an image that you don't think is going
right.
to move out of the
exactly.
frame.
Exactly. Yeah. You could, you know, press it and then, you know, rotate the camera around.
We've had some emails come in, and one of them is sort of a big picture question, which gets back to that somewhat provocative question I was asking earlier. This is from Christine. She says, it's clear that new technologies are making picture taking and editing easier. What happens to the artistry then of traditional photography? She says, by that I mean knowing the ins and outs of your camera and having the ability with that knowledge to create incredible images. The marriage, if you will, of technical knowledge and artistry, is that becoming compromised at all?
You know, that marriage of the technological and the artistry, that's really the reason that I love photography and why I got into it. To a degree, because the cameras are doing so much of the thinking, it does reduce some of that ability or some of the requirement for people to think about how their camera operates to produce the effect they want to give. One of the advantages of the cameras doing so much of the thinking is that that allows people who maybe don't want to bother or don't have the mind for thinking about the technical parts to produce really amazing images. But, you know, for the people that are interested in, you know, learning more about photography and about the cameras, there are cameras out there that do allow you to have that kind of control to be able to envision the image that you want to produce and then manipulate the camera in such a way so that it will produce that image that you pre-visualized.
We have an email from Gary. He says, I take thousands of landscape photos with my Sony HX9V. If I take a photo of three tall buildings in a row, how can I minimize the tops of the two outside buildings from tipping into the middle building? That is keeping parallel lines parallel.
Right. One of the awesome features for a lot of the image editing software is that they have a transformation or a filter that you can do that is a perspective filter. So in Adobe Photoshop, if you go to the Edit menu and you go down to Transform, you can either use the Distort choice or the Perspective choice. And you can get in, if you have it display a grid on the screen, you can actually straighten up all those lines as a post-processing thing. If you have a higher-level camera, they have some tilt and shift lenses that you can buy that will help you do that while you're taking the picture, which is probably even a better solution if you have a camera that has interchangeable lenses.
All right. So then that brings us right back to that question. Here's another example where a digital camera maybe provides you with yet another tool that you didn't have with the traditional film
right.
cameras. Why take photos with film anymore?
You know, I mean, certainly one of the advantages of film, I suppose, is that you have that negative or that slide, so that I suppose that could add some level of veracity that this image is what it is on this negative. Now, in reality, though, there are film recorders where you can actually produce a new negative or a new slide from your digital image. I think probably for archiving or something, there might be some reason to still shoot film. But honestly, for the most part, it would have to be some very special, maybe artistic process you're doing with that film to justify staying with it. You know, we still have books. We still have people that, you know, use watercolors. We still have, you know, artists that are using marble to sculpt things and not doing things using a 3D printer, for instance.
I wonder if maybe another comparison would be record albums versus digital downloads. There are those who would say that certain albums that were recorded in a studio with the understanding that they would be pressed onto vinyl were
right.
done so in such a way so that a certain sound would emanate from that record, and that the
right.
digital version of it does not compare.
Well, and some of it is too, is that so when you're recording on film versus digital, or in the case of music, there's digital sampling versus analog sampling, and there is a difference there. And I think when it comes right down to it, though, if you put someone in front of a picture that was done with film and one that was done with a digital camera, you know, is there a measurable difference that is an improvement? Somewhat the same way with audio recording. You know, so is there a difference that's discernible? And how do people listen to most of their music? Are they using, you know, headphones? Are they listening to it while they're riding in a car? So the recording definitely is one part of it. But what's the net result? You know, what's the result for the person standing in front of an image and looking at it or listening to the music?
And that gets back to how we feel, you know, how we approach our old-fashioned photos in that photo album versus how we look at digital photos or images that
right.
we have on our computer
right.
or on a handheld device.
You know, one really quick thing that I'll mention, too, is that one of the other areas that's been booming is the ability to do a custom-printed book of your images, which I think is phenomenal because I love books, and there is something special about having your pictures printed in a book. So it gets at that photo album idea and in some ways takes it one step better because then you have this actual printed hardbound book that has all of your pictures in it. And I think there is something special about that.
Brian, I'm afraid we are out of time. We had a couple other emails that come in we just don't have time to get to today. I was wondering maybe you'd be able to address those
absolutely
after the show.
Happy to do it.
Terrific. Brian Johnson is a professor of journalism in the College of Media at the University of Illinois and a former newspaper staff photojournalist. And Brian, thanks as always for being with us.
Absolutely.
Programs like Focus are possible because of individuals like you who become annual contributors to WILL. We provide the in-depth news and information, the thoughtful conversations, the contextual analysis, but annual donors provide the funds that make it all possible. We simply could not do this without the friends of WILL, your friends and neighbors. This is our end of the calendar year campaign, and it is a brief one. In just 36 hours of fundraising, we are tasked with raising $36,000. As you might imagine, if you do that quick math, you realize that we're kind of looking to try and raise at least $1,000 each hour, and that would include this hour of Focus. It all starts with one pledge, one contribution, yours, at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. When you do, we have lots of ways of saying thank you for your contribution. And to tell us more, here again is David Teal. David.
All righty. We want to let you know how we're doing here. We're getting close to $8,000.
Fantastic.
In so far. And we are trying to get to $15,000 today in
okay.
support of the stations. And, you know, of course, on the way to that $36,000 goal, you think, well, you know, $36,000 doesn't, you know, that would be more like $12,000 a day. But, you know, we know we're going to, you know, do better on Thursday and Friday than on Saturday because,
right.
you know,
fewer people listening on a
so,
Saturday.
So, you know, yeah. So that's why we want to get people on the phone right now at 244-9455. We want to get 10 calls right now. We're up over 40 calls so far. So that's great.
Overall for the day.
Overall.
And how many during this hour do we know?
Five.
Wow.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so five more calls right now at 217-244-9455. It would be great to have 10 contributions in support of WILL during Focus. That would be really fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, you know, Focus is, of course, one of our flagship local shows, and it's been on for many, many years, and, you know, we want to keep it on for many, many more. We can only do that with your help, your contribution right now. You can take advantage of any number of thank you gifts that we have. But I do want to mention that we have an event coming up with Rick Steves, a travel guru. He will be here in town on March 14th, and we have a special event with him. You can get tickets for that event at the $150 level. And I think that also includes a bunch of paraphernalia, books and paraphernalia by Rick Steves. And then at the $250 level, we have premium seats to that event and also to a brunch. You get to have brunch with Rick Steves.
And of course, don't forget to bring your camera along.
Yes, exactly. Yes, your digital camera.
Well, if that's what you have, if you prefer film, that's fine, too.
That's fine, too. 244-9455. We really do want to hear from you right now.
And remember, we have this member match going on right
yes.
now. When you call in your pledge right now, your gift will be matched with a $36 contribution from a pool of money raised by current Friends of WILL members who want to make our $36,000 in 36 hours campaign a success. So if you make a pledge of $50, then WILL realizes $86, 36 above that. If you give $120 for us, it's like $156.
What if it's 75?
Oh, Lord, we're going to do this again. Okay, then it would be $111.
Oh, nicely done.
Thank you. Well, I had practice this morning.
Math.
I was not doing the math very well. The phone number to call is 217-244-9455. Make that pledge right now, and you'll make your pledge dollars go even further. 244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. David, it takes just a couple of minutes out of your morning, and you hear the dollars at work all year long.
Yeah, and you really do. I mean, this is, of course, a terrific show. I'm always glad to be a part of it here and really appreciate the work that you put into it and keeping up the legacy of Focus here.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate it, and thanks for coming in this hour.
Thanks.
Again, that's 217-244-9455 or securely online at willpledge.org. And, of course, we welcome any additional thoughts you may have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, we will turn our attention to children's health. Our guest will be Dr. Malcolm Hill, a pediatrician from Carl in Urbana. Dr. Hill can respond to a range of concerns, anything from vaccinations and common childhood illness to coping with minor bumps and bruises. Any problem you might discuss with your own family doctor will be welcome on the show. That's on Friday. Today's program was produced by Travis Stanzel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry is our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.